This is XTP Media.
Welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Hello, I'm Peter Johnson and welcome back to Aviation Extended. Today, my guest is Matt Folkus, the person behind airportspotting.com, one of the best-known websites for anyone who enjoys airports, airliners, and the ever-changing world of commercial aviation. Matt's an aviation writer, an author, private pilot, and the creator of the Airport Spotting Guide series. He spent more than two decades travelling to airports around the world in search of interesting aircraft, new routes, and the best places to watch all the aircraft action. He's just returned from Oshkosh, so we'll be talking about that amazing show and what caught his eye in the ever-changing face of airport spotting. Matt, welcome back to Extended.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's been a while. We've talked many, many moons ago, but it's great to have you back. I'm sort of excited because I've got back into that sort of fingers in the fence kid that I used to be. It's just now we do it on YouTube. So I've sort of dipped a bit more back into the stuff you've been producing, and I'm quite excited. But first, before we talk about airport spotting, you've just got back from Oshkosh. As we record this, how does the Brit end up in Oshkosh, and was it everything you hoped for?
Yeah, it was, and everything and more. I think it's one of those things that every aviation enthusiast has on their bucket list, and we all know about it. And it was just, it was an incredible trip. It was about 2 years in the planning for us. I went with some friends, and it's not as easy as for us to get there as Brits as it is for the Americans who can pop over. But it was incredible. It's absolute aviation theme park. There's something going on everywhere. There's aircraft everywhere and there's people everywhere. It's just an incredible experience. I haven't processed it all yet. It's still going through.
I'm sure we're going to see some content coming out of you. I know you've already written some. I've never been there. I've seen the pictures and it feels slightly overwhelming. But what was the plan? Why were you looking for something? Was there just going for the experience? What was the idea behind the visit?
At the very basic level, as a plane spotter, you hear that there are up to 10,000 planes there in 1 week, and you think, wow, I can go and log 10,000 planes if logging tail numbers. And so that was the very basic. Wow, we're going to go and see all these aircraft. But you know about there are all the historic and vintage aircraft there. There's the air shows and there's just such a variety. So I think at the basic level, we were going to log planes and we just wanted to explore and find out what it's going to be like. And it just turned out to be so much more than that. There's something going on everywhere you look. In the air and on the ground, and there's so many people. It's so friendly. It's so easy to get around. We were told beforehand by someone who'd been before that, you will be overwhelmed, and don't try and do everything, because the moment you go through the gates, there are just aircraft left, right, center in the sky, and you've really got to sort of work out what you want to see, how long you've got there, and kind of make a plan. So we made the painful decision just to walk past the first aircraft we saw and just go and try and divide the site. So we did 4 days there and to try and see every area, because it's full of light aircraft, vintage aircraft, warbirds, experimental aircraft, of course, which is what they're all about.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just divided the site over 4 days and tried to see everything.
Wow. So I got to put you on the spot. Was there a moment, an aircraft, was there anything that really stood out for you?
As a fan of the DC-3, I think seeing so many DC-3s in one place, the American flagship DC-3 was there, which I think is the oldest one still flying.
Oh, okay.
Just to get to walk around that and see it's immaculate, and so many others. And another highlight as well, because everyone's so friendly, everyone's on the same page about the love of aviation. We were just sort of wandering around to the northern part where the FBO is, and it has an apron full of his jets, his props. We were just invited to just wander around.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get it at any other airport. We could just wander around, take pictures. They invite us in, have a coffee with them. And it was just, yeah, that was a standout moment for me, was just to being able to walk around like that and see these aircraft.
Well, I think it's on a lot of people's bucket list who hasn't been. Now, let's talk about airportspotting.com. Those who maybe didn't hear you the first time you were with us, tell us a little bit about the idea. What's behind it, and how's it grown over the last decade or so?
Yeah, well, I think we started in 2008, so it's been going for quite a while now. It was a blog. It was the early days of blogs, and you know, I used to write articles for magazines, and try and get some content out there. And I thought this is a good way to keep writing and to have regular content, to try and share tips on where to spot at airports, what's happening in the world of civil aviation. We don't really cover military much, but and tips for aviation enthusiasts. And it's grown from that, really. It's now quite a big beast. It's grown big on Facebook. We're growing on YouTube. On Facebook itself, we have, you know, reach over 1 million people every month, and the website puts out articles 2 or 3 times a day. And we have a premium membership. We have lots of extra content and books and things. So it's grown into a bit of a beast, but it's mostly just from myself and my background in writing about spotting and civil aviation. And it's grown from that route.
And I know, you know, we'll come to the spotting guides in a bit. You also, one of the interesting things I think about the sites, the blogs and the content, is you do talk about relevant news, you talk about modern airliners, the industry, but you also cover the classic sector as well.
Yeah.
Which is, for me, a bit of an oldie. It's one of those places that's not, it's not unique, but it has a nice blend of, I think, a bit of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, because the aim of the site is really to share tips and news and what's the new things to see, where can you go. But we always find anything classic, it really gets people interested, and it helps back to the old days. It brings up memories of plane spotting trips in the 70s, 80s, maybe earlier. So there's always a good mix of classic airliners, and those articles do really well, those pictures.
Yeah.
So that will always be on there, because it's just such good memories.
Yeah. And, you know, like I sort of hinted at earlier, I've sort of been dragged back into the passion to just literally watch aeroplanes again. You know, watch them land, watch them take off, taxi, wander around the airport. But there seems to be a really heavy interest, a renewed interest, I'd like to suggest, but I probably think it's a lot of new entrants and people who have come into airport spotting or just have an interest in aviation. What does it tell us about aviation enthusiasm? Is it on the increase? What's your feel about where it is at the moment?
I think, yeah, it's still there. It's still as popular as it was. I think it's definitely shifted. Like I think you mentioned earlier about YouTube, we all probably do armchair plane spotting now. There's so many live feeds from airports and YouTubers who broadcast like movements, which it's great, and it's really renewed an interest. I think there are lots of young spotters, like young enthusiasts. The internet and smartphones and things have really changed things.
Yeah.
I think Flight Radar, which was a massive thing for the aviation spotting community, because it made things so much easier for us, and it's brought in a lot of new people. So many people who are not enthusiasts still have Flight Radar on their phone.
It
just shows how popular it is, and everyone's so keen to see, if you see an aircraft in the sky, a trail, to know what it is, where it's going.
Yeah.
And
we got
these
new boxes, haven't we? And I know Helen Weber, I spoke to last week, I know she's got one on her desk, one of these new panels with the LED screens that tells you the nearest aircraft. Have you got one yet?
No, I haven't, but Facebook is advertising it to me every day, and it's only a matter of time, I think, before I'm tempted. But I see them all the time. It looks really cool.
I got it on my Christmas list, and my wife said to me, "Oh my God, you're going to love that."
The fact these things are coming out and it shows there's an interest in aviation still. So yeah, I think lots of spots about this stuff.
Now, you mentioned them very briefly when you were off Oshkosh taking registrations. That's what I started doing back in the day. And I still sort of, every time I see an aircraft, look at its registration. I think it's just in my DNA now. But it's not just recording registrations. There's liveries, there's aircraft types. And actually, there's ticking off various airports. Let's get a bit more specific. What makes an airport genuinely great for spotting?
I think anyone of a certain age will remember that most airports used to have a viewing area or a terrace to go on.
Yep.
And it's not very common anymore. But some still do. Certain countries seem to have a prevalence of spotting terraces, like in Germany, Switzerland, and Japan. They're always great airports if you have somewhere to go where you've got a great view, you can take the pictures, and it's somewhere safe to go where you're not going to worry about a security going to come along and move you along, or is it just you look like you're acting suspiciously? So I think they're also great airports, that, you know, the Zurichs and Tokyo and places like Frankfurt, which always seem to encourage spotting and welcome it. I think there are a lot of airports that sort of have a reputation, I guess, among spotters. You know, the great ones where you're always going to see some good variety, some newer aircraft or classic aircraft. I think people always flock to Heathrow or to Los Angeles or Frankfurt, where they've always been known as good spotting airports, even if they don't necessarily have viewing areas always now. But I think they're always the great airports where people flock to, and if they have somewhere to view, then that's great. Yeah.
Have you got a favourite?
I went to Zurich this year, and it was the first time I'd been, and it was really good, really friendly. The viewing areas are amazing. There's a good mix of traffic coming in. So I think that's a new favourite of mine. Frankfurt was always a favourite as well, because I lived there for a while and used to pop there every weekend. So
yeah,
that was always a favourite. Yeah, but Los Angeles, yeah, New York, so it was good.
And I saw on the site, maybe a couple of weeks ago now, all about the top 10 by aircraft movements. You know, back in the day when I was a youngster, you know, you had Heathrow and Atlanta, I think. And Heathrow sort of drifted out of the numbers and became the busiest international airport. And I'm not even sure it's that anymore. But when I looked at the top 10 by movements, of course, most are in the US, but it was quite interesting. I think Turkey crept in there, and China, of course, crept in there. And the whole dynamics of aircraft movement is shifting a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, with that particular article, I wrote it from the movement's perspective, because that is more interesting when you put enthusiasts. Mostly you see the busiest airports by passenger numbers. But for an enthusiast, you want to know, where am I going to see the most aircraft movements, the most aircraft? So that list came from that idea, really.
Okay.
And so you'll see Chicago is now top because of movements, whereas it was Atlanta.
Yeah.
But Istanbul and Turkey has crept up massively over the past 10 years.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Turkish Airlines. Turkish Airlines, I think they serve more destinations than any other airline. So it's only natural, really, that this can be so busy.
Yeah, didn't know that. But I suppose geographically could be another one of those hubs in the network, you know, a bit like Dubai. It's not a million miles away. And given what's happening in the Middle East at the moment, sort of a bit of an opportunity for Turkey to steal a march.
Yeah, I think that's what they're planning. That's what they're hoping.
Yeah.
I think they'd love to be one of those east to west connector points.
Yeah.
And Istanbul's really interesting for enthusiasts, because you still have a lot of aircraft coming from Russia, from Iran, well, maybe not Iran so much at the moment, but from the Middle East. So you see lots of rare airlines there still, even though it's in Europe. It's a good mix of traffic there.
And one question I forgot to ask you, Matt, when we were talking earlier, mentioned about regs and photography. Where's the sector at the moment? Do most people go to photograph? Do most people go to collect regs, or a bit like me? You know, a bit old and will watch anything sort of thing. Where is it?
I think it's mostly photography now.
Yeah.
Pictures. I think registration spotting, tail number spotting, it's not as popular anymore, but it's still there. We found when we were in Oshkosh that a lot of the American pilots and people there were curious what we were doing. We were wandering around taking notes of the registration of their aircraft. Yeah. Not many had heard of it.
Yeah.
I thought it was something a regular person would do.
I mean, how do you do that in Oshkosh? I mean,
we discussed this a lot in the planning, how we were going to do this, because of it. There were thousands and thousands of aircraft there. Smartphones are really useful, so yeah. We just walked up and down the rows, picture.
Yeah,
we can do all the logging, working things out afterwards.
Yeah,
but you don't have time really to write down everything.
And, yeah,
so it's smartphones are useful. Just picture.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I think we covered about 30 miles off the week of walking.
Wow. And I mean, back in the day, we had civil aircraft markings and what was the big international one, the fleet book. Do those sorts of things?
Yeah, JP fleets.
Yeah, do they still exist?
They do. I'm not sure how popular they are, because I think a lot of enthusiasts moved to databases about 10, 20 years ago. So there are lots of databases which are really good. They have everything in there and they get updated weekly. So you've always got the latest aircraft details, whereas the books are always out of date.
Yeah.
You know, they're published once a year. But they do exist. You can buy books of airline fleets and biz jet fleets, Air Force fleets. I think there are a few different options.
Yeah, I did try 2 or 3 years ago to get my teenage daughter to come to the local airfields with me. We took a few registrations, which sounded really exciting to her. After about half an hour, she was like, yeah, where's the ice cream van? Let's go and have a burger,
yeah, exactly.
Dad. So I failed miserably. But for me, and in my local environment, for those small little airports, it's really easy to get there, you know, to have a coffee, watch the planes. But I think when we last talked, one of the big issues we talked about was access. You know, we were seeing spotters in the news being arrested and things like that. How are things now? Is that eased? Is it still a problem in some airports?
I think it's generally the same or worse. It's one of the biggest issues is that real estate is such a prime thing for airports that they're not really going to provide something for enthusiasts if they can add a new hangar or a new lounge on the terminal where the viewing terraces used to be. So I think we're not high priority, but you still get some airports, and like you mentioned, airfields, they're always a good place because of the good community there. You usually have a cafe to watch. But at airports, it's not a big thing. There's some that are sort of set booking the trend a bit. Recently, there's been new viewing areas at airports, I think in Dublin and Tokyo and Perth in Australia. I think Seattle was one as well that provided a viewing area in its terminal extension.
Yeah.
So some have it on the radars, but it's not really easy. And I think with the security aspects, it's still seen as suspicious to have people loitering around the house.
Are there particular countries that, you know, people listening here who may be planning a trip need to be aware of in terms of that security? Because I was quite surprised. I seem to remember Greece or somewhere like that being somewhere where some spotters were arrested, and I was genuinely surprised.
Yeah, I think there was a case in Greece where some spotters were viewing a military airfield, and I think that just raised alarm bells, so they were arrested.
Yeah.
And there was another story in I think it was Delhi in India, where a spotter was seen taking pictures from their hotel room, which I think the cleaner thought it was suspicious and reported them, and that didn't go well. So, yeah, countries like that, I think the Middle East, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, that I wouldn't do it openly. I know plenty of spotters go to Dubai, and it's always been a popular place, but it needs to be done discreetly.
Yeah.
You don't need to be hang about fences with cameras and binoculars, because you will usually be questioned, arrested. It's not easy to spot then.
Yeah.
How
about military airfields? You know, if I'm specific to the UK, you know, we've got places like Lake and Heath. I'm always seeing photographs, videos of people. What's the security issues like for spotters in places like that for us?
I think in general, there are more enthusiasts who are into military than civil.
Yeah.
certainly in the UK, the military air force are quite understanding. I was at Coningsby recently, and we went to visit the Battle of Britain Memorial flight, and there's a viewing area right next to it, and it's crowded with cars all day long.
Yeah.
It's very accepted. It's not a something that people are doing, unofficially. It's well known by the airfields of the people spot there. So I think there are various viewing areas at various airfields, in the UK at least. I think in America as well, it's quite accepted. There's often the case that you should let someone know, that the police or the security know what you're doing.
But
it's quite common. Obviously, certain countries you just wouldn't hang around military airfields.
Yeah.
It's not going to go down well.
G'day, I'm Dave Homewood of the Wings Over New Zealand show, New Zealand's only regular aviation podcast series. The Wings Over New Zealand show covers all sorts of aviation topics, with a New Zealand flavour but an international appeal. From interviews with veterans and aviation personalities, to topics like military aviation, warbirds, air shows, historians, authors, museums, aviation events, and much, much more. We have an extensive archive of episodes that you can go back to, and there are new episodes coming out all the time. Search for the Wings Over New Zealand show. Oh, and by the way, we love Extended. It's a great show. Well done, guys.
From across the globe, from the centre of aerospace, and now to you.
Welcome from the Royal Aeronautical Society. The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. We will bring you multimedia, lectures and discussion from inside the world of aviation, aeronautics and space. If you enjoy our content, please consider showing your support for the Society. If you have an interest in aerospace, find out about the professional and personal benefits that Society membership offers. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
G'day, I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran from Plane Crazy Down Under.
And you're listening to Extended.
Okay, now one of the things that you do on the site as well is you pick topics and you focus on them. One of the ones that's fascinated me, particularly in the last decade, is the Airbus-Boeing competition. We've seen the success of the Neos from Airbus, and we've seen the challenges that Boeing has had, particularly with the MAX. But you did an article recently on the 737 MAX 7, which I some of the variants are a little bit unusual. Let's talk a little bit about some of those. I mean, what's your view first about that whole Airbus, Boeing 737 versus A320 range competition?
Competition, yeah. I think it is such a big rivalry. And I think enthusiasts and people in the industry really push the rivalry because there's a lot to gain or lose. You always have a preference, I guess, if you're European or American, North American. But yeah, clearly the 321neo and its variants have done so well. It's suddenly, for an aircraft that came out in the early 90s, didn't do as well as the 320, now is the greatest thing ever. And it's got a huge backlog of orders, and it's doing incredible things with its range and its comfort and onboard amenities. Whereas the 737, obviously the MAX had great potential. It still does. It's still popular, but it had its setbacks early on. And then with the later variants, the MAX 7 and 10 have had such a delay in gaining certification, which only came recently, or it's just coming now. So I think that's set them back a lot.
Where do those variants fit in, though, Matt? You know, being a bit more specific, it just feels like, is it variants for variants' sake, or is there a real desire and a market opportunity for them? Particularly the 7, I think.
Yeah, the 7 is... seems like it's not going to be as popular, whereas it's largely equivalent to the next generation 737-700, which was popular.
Yeah.
And obviously Southwest Airlines had a huge fleet of it. And
yeah.
They're now the only real airlines to order the MAX 7. There are a couple of, I think, business jet versions, but and they've only got 200 or so on order, so it doesn't seem like it's going to be a popular variant. You may only see it with Southwest Airlines, and it may just quietly stop taking orders.
Yeah.
Whereas the MAX 10, which is the bigger version, which is also coming soon, that's proving really popular. It's in the 1,500 orders, I think.
Yeah.
And I think people are comparing it to the A321, but I think they do different things. I think the 321neo has the range, and the MAX 10 is more about a higher capacity 737.
Yeah.
So I don't think they are like for like, really. They are different aircraft.
Yeah. And I suppose I was going to say they're both aiming to replace the 757 and that little niche. I mean, the 757 is a unique aircraft. I mean, I loved flying it. I loved the engine sound. I loved those Rolls-Royce engines spooling up. Always felt exciting. You've recently written about the 757. You know, it is becoming rarer. We're seeing less and less of it. I'm trying to think when I last saw one. I can't remember, but along with that sort of aircraft, quite a few are aging now as the Neos and the Maxes just swamp everything. What are the aircraft that we should be getting out to see now before we lose out, other than the 757 and liveries and airlines and things like that?
I mean the 757 is always such a popular aircraft. I think it will continue into the 2030s. I think certainly with Delta and certainly the freighter, because it's a popular freighter. But there are a few sort of era which are becoming rarer, and I think won't be around too much longer. I think the Airbus 318 is now there's only two or three left flying with Air France, and they'll be gone possibly this year. The Boeing 717 as well, which was sort of the last variant of the DC-9. Those who remember that, which is only flying with Delta and Hawaiian Airlines. And I think Hawaiian already has plans that their new owner is Alaska Airlines, and they're planning to replace them possibly with 737s. Older ones, I think the Airbus 340 is now, you know, not many left. Certainly the 600 is only flying with Lufthansa mainly, and a few smaller airlines, but it's going to be gone, I think, this year with Lufthansa.
Yeah, I live near, relatively near to Bournemouth, so I used to see the red-tailed A340s a fair bit, but that's gone into receivership, that business. I think it's just been bought out, so I'm praying they'll fly them again.
We had them here at Teesside as well. They came up briefly, flew for a few weeks and went into administration, but yeah, I heard they're going to be flying again. It was great to see. Teesside's quite a small airport, and seeing an A340 600 coming in a few times a week is it's incredible. We still have one parked here.
I love the four holers, as they say. I love the four holers.
There's not many left.
Yeah. Anything else we should be looking out for?
I think the MD-80, I think, as well, is one that was so popular. There's not many airlines now. I think one of the few airlines still to fly it is one in Kazakhstan, I think, and their only example had a landing accident a couple of weeks ago. So, well, that's another one gone. I don't know. You mostly see the MD-80 in South America and the Caribbean now, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, airlines like the 737-200, which it's quite old now. It's one that I remember as a kid flying on all the time.
Yeah.
It's only really flying in Canada now and a few South American places, I think.
What about some prop liners? Because they seem to be pretty rare these days as well.
Yeah, I mean, actual prop liners, the old wartime era ones. There are lots of DC-3s in heritage operation, and things like the DC-4, DC-6 are not really flying much now. You see cargo ones and some heritage ones. Later sort of turboprop ones, things like the early Embraers, like the Banzerati and the Brasilia, only flying in a few places.
And I loved, by the way, your coverage of the Herald and stuff like that, which I remember very fondly. And again, unique sounding aircraft.
Yeah, the Rolls-Royce Dart engine.
Yeah,
had a whistle about them, and you could always tell them. Same with the F-27 and the Avro 748. We're just putting together a guide to the 748, the HS-748, which is a nice hark back to another classic airline from the British aviation scene. which again is gone just about now, I think.
Yeah, I flew on a 748, a LEAT 748 in the Caribbean in the, and I'm going to say, mid-70s. So right. Big, colourful yellow 748. Lovely, lovely aircraft.
Yeah. Yeah, and it became the British Aerospace ATP as well, yep. Which again is gone. I went to Sweden to fly one just before they finished passenger service.
Yeah.
And they're gone now. Yeah. There's so many toxic aircraft which are not around, but you can often see them languishing in the corner of an airfield or maybe at a museum.
Yeah.
Or in a cargo operation. Yeah, we produce a guide called Last Chance to Fly for our premium members, which has, it lists about 50 different aircraft types, which you can still fly on. We just wear and we update it regularly. So it's, you know, because it's something I love to do is to go and try and fly yeah. Something that's just about gone or that's rare. So
done anything exciting? What ones have you flown on that we might not be seeing now in the past few years?
There was a great story was, in 2019, just before the Ukraine war kicked off, really, I went to Ukraine to try and fly in the Antonov 26, which was flying regularly there. I'd seen various YouTubers going on it, and I thought, well, I'm going to go and try it. It was quite cheap. So I booked my ticket, got to Lviv, and the bus took us out to the aircraft on the remote ramp, and there was an Antonov 74, which was the one with the huge engines above the wings, I think.
Yeah.
It was the only example of flying passengers in the world, and it had been substituted that day for our flight, so that was incredible.
Yeah.
It flew to Kyiv on that day.
Wow.
Trying to think of others that I remember flying on the TriStar as well, just before it retired with the RAF. They did a special trip on the last day of operations, and the viewers got to experience an aerial refueling flight.
Wow.
And that was the only time I ever flew a TriStar. So
yeah.
That was a good one.
Oh, I flew a TWA TriStar in the States from, I'm trying to remember now, St. Louis to somewhere. But lovely aircraft. I was a DC-10 fan myself, but the TriStar was lovely.
Yeah, I flew two United Airlines DC-10s back.
Yeah,
in the 90s, it's a beast of an aircraft.
Yeah, and the MD-11, I hear, might be making a little comeback and after its mishap a year or so.
Not passengers, sadly. That I think 2014 was the last passenger flight, but FedEx have brought them back, and Western Global have brought them back. I think UPS have completely retired the fleet after the accident.
Yeah,
but there have been some modifications, and I think FedEx will bring them slowly back. And how long, I don't know, because it's quite an aging aircraft now, and there are not many around. I think they much prefer to rely on the 767s, 777s, and the next generation of freighters, which are coming, like the A350 freighter.
Yeah.
So it's one to see while you can, the MD-11.
Yeah.
I think it'll mostly be the SA.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Funnily enough, you mentioned in a 767 there, I was on a business trip earlier this week and saw a 767, and actually I hadn't seen one for ages. They're getting rarer to see too.
Certainly the older version, the 200 model, I think is only flying passengers in Russia and Zimbabwe, I think. The 300, it's certainly been replaced by 777s and now the 350s, Dreamliners. But the still Air Delta has a lot, the United has them. You'll certainly find them in the States, I remember flying them with charter airlines in the 90s. It was quite a common aircraft with Britannia and Air 2000, people like that.
Yeah, I can remember British Airways using them on the shuttle services.
The British Airways had an interesting sort of selection of routes to use, like domestic ones and long haul.
Yeah, interesting. What else can we find on the site? What other sort of things do you cover and people can look out for?
We try and publish a few articles a day. It's always anything newsworthy. I try to cover it from the angle of an enthusiast. So it's rather than just a financial result or a new order, it's a new deliverance to see or something new that's coming along which might be of interest to enthusiasts. Produce airline profiles, so it covers any special liveries you might see, what kind of fleet they have. Like a recognition guide. We do spotting guides for different airports, and we mentioned earlier about the popular ones, but plenty of airports have potential spotting. So we try and cover smaller airports, and where would you go to spot there, and what would you see? Yeah. Is it worth it compared to a different airport nearby? All sorts of, lots of classic stuff. You know, look back at classic airliners and airlines. So it's a real mix, yeah.
Okay. So finally, just before we go then, somebody wants to start thinking about going to the airport again. What's your advice? Where do they go? What do they take? What should they look out for?
Yeah, I think decide, are you into military or civil first? Cause that depends. You don't really get many mixed airports, whether you'll see a lot of military or civil aircraft. Work out where your local airport is, and you know, is it a big airport, a small airfield? Are there spotting locations there? You can usually find out by doing some research or just driving past. You might see some people there spotting.
Or they should buy your guides.
Or should buy, yes. We produce a couple of guides which list all the best places and on the website as well. You get something like Flight Radar 24 or one of the other tracking apps, and that's always good. If you're at home and you see some trails in the sky, learn where these aircraft are going and what the types. If you're not really up on what different aircraft types are, there are plenty of books out there and websites which sort of deal with recognition and learning which different aircraft are out there and which are common. If you want to go down the spotting route, the actual logging aircraft, then there's some great databases, or you can buy the books like we say, and they list all the tail numbers, registrations, and start ticking them off when you see them. I think not many people will take binoculars these days. You can use your phone, really. You could invest in a big camera, but again, a smartphone is great these days for taking pictures and taking record shots, videos, and just sort of get a feel for it. Learn if there are any other plane spotters in your areas, with a community for your area, take it from there and grow with it. Find out what's interesting. Yeah, on the airport spotting website, there is a beginner's guide if you look at the top.
Okay,
that's a good walkthrough of how to be a spotter, what you need, what to do, and things like that.
Okay. So where can we find the website? Where can we find you online? How can we get a hold of the guides?
The website is airportspotting.com, and that has links to our social media things. I think we're Airports and Plane Spotting on Facebook. You can buy the guides through the Airport Spotting website, and there's a books section. There's a premium membership as well, which we put together more content and weekly deliveries, emails, things like that. Which we don't give for free, so there's more resources on there. The basic place to go is airportspotting.com, and it's all listed on there.
All right, Matt, really exciting. I'm off to go and load Heathrow Approach up again on YouTube. You got me all excited again. Listen, thanks so much for joining us today.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'd like to thank White Hearts for our music, and I'd like to thank Matt for joining us today. Our book, Constant Endeavour, RAF Coastal Command, is available in audiobook and ebook formats. Every single penny we raise goes to Help for Heroes, so please do go out and support us and Help for Heroes by getting a copy of that book. You can find me at Nascot Hornet on social media, and of course through the multiple XTP media platforms. You can also find me as the host on the Partnership Edge podcast. You can find Tim, Ellie and Gareth on both their personal and, of course, through the extended social feeds. That's it with the arrival of the music. It's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency. This is Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. The program's produced with a Creative Commons license.
Please leave us a review wherever you play your podcast. It genuinely helps grow our program and broaden its reach. You can also review the program and leave us feedback on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to email us, our email address is getinvolved@aviationextended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of Extended.
Extended.
This is XTP Media.